Sean Doherty, thank you so much for joining me on 2SER this morning.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Now, surfing finds itself in a place where the industry, the media, and the athletes can all have a voice for social, political, and environmental change. Is this a relatively new thing, or is it always something that's been around?
It's been around, certainly, but not for a long time. I think if you wind back to the 70s, you look at surfers and they were active in across all sorts of stuff, you know, particularly in environmental and social issues. They had a voice. It was more the zeitgeist of the times because it was happening generally throughout society. But in a way, kind of surfers were leading it. You know, there was a famous Tim Leary line that surfers were the throwerheads. And I think at that time they kind of were on a few levels. But I think you've probably seen in the last few decades, surfing is kind of like a very, you know, you can get very self-absorbed with it. And we've had decades where people have just gone surfing. There've been good surfing years. You know, people have been able to travel. We've been kind of relatively wealthy. We've had a lot of free time. And people have just thrown themselves into surfing. And I think particularly you look at somewhere like Australia, and particularly with environmental issues, there hasn't been a lot to really push back against. We've got beautiful beaches. Like, you know, we live in the land of milk and honey. So hasn't been a lot to really push back against. I think you can probably go back to the ocean outfalls in the cities as the last real kind of rallying point. And so we've had a couple of decades of just going surfing. But I think in that time, a lot of things have quietly shifted and developments have been happening and the speed of everything around the coast has picked up. And I think that this has kind of just come full circle back again. And we've landed back to a point we were in the 70s, I think.
Where do you see social media and technology's position in providing this platform for the industry and for athletes? I think a lot of the time without the athletes, sometimes people don't just listen, you know, to journos and things like that.
What's happening particularly with surfing is the major surfers and the biggest names, they're all sponsored by brands. And what's traditionally happened is the brands are kind of very risk averse. They just like to focus on their business and they don't like to rattle cages. And because the surfers have been tethered to brands over time, they haven't really felt they've had a, you know, brave enough to step out on their own and really kind of, you know, take stances on important stuff. But that's clearly shifted, you know, social media's clearly shifted that. And I think probably the state of the surf industry's kind of helped with that as well. That, you know, there's been a bit of a recorrection with some of the bigger companies, and they're not as powerful as they once were, and so surfers are kind of far more independent in terms of having a voice on that platform, and they've all got accounts, and they can just, you know, they can just put it out there in the breeze. So you're seeing a lot more of it these days, for sure.
What do you think's different about surfing though compared to other sports? Because you see the athletes being more, from what I see, more transparent about their social, political, environmental views on social media than in other sports, who might sort of toe more of that brand line like you talk about. And in general, it seems that surfing is more transparent and has an ability to be more vocal about things and allow people to sort of see what's underneath more than other sports.
Yeah, no, you're right, definitely. I think there's probably a couple of elements at play here. I think particularly environmentally, it's not just the immersive nature of it. You're out in amongst it every day. And you kind of, one of the great things that brings people to surfing is that daily immersion. You know, you get in amongst, you're actually at the front line of nature, and you do, you know, you do kind of feel a deeper connection to what's going on in the natural world just because you're diving headlong into it every day. So I think that's inherent in this. And I also think that the fact that surfing, it's very independent, you know, in terms as an exercise of what you're doing, it's you out there on your own. And I think in a way that kind of fosters independent thinking as well around things. It's not, when you look at it in terms of, you know, you weigh it up against other sports, team sports in particular, you know, it does allow people to be themselves. And I think you're seeing that reflected a bit now in terms of, you know, people getting out and saying what they think on important social and environmental issues.
There's probably a lot of people listening who kind of don't really know what we're talking about. They don't follow surfing and they don't know the athletes and they don't realise that surfing's in this place now. Do you want to just take us through a couple of the sort of tangible things that have happened over the last, you know, say decade, 5 years, or even more recently, where we've seen surfing play a big role in progress?
Sure. Yeah, no worries. I think, you know, if you look here in Australia, obviously the touchstone issue, the big one that surfers got involved with was the Great Australian Bite. There was a proposal down there that, you know, dated back to the, I think, around 2012. There's been big multinational oil companies sniffing around trying to drill in really deep water out there. There's no development down there at all. There's nothing down there. It's a marine reserve for most of it. And surfers got behind it, and it kind of unlocked that thing we were talking about, that kind of latent will of surfers to get involved and have a voice on this stuff that hadn't been there for so long was suddenly there again. Mm. You know, it just like literally, it just was, it took the click of fingers, and this one issue that was, it was a strange issue because it's a long way away. You know, the bite for crew on the East Coast, it's, you know, it's a couple of thousand Ks away. Most crew who surf on the East Coast will never go there because it's so removed and remote. And yet they, you know, really invested themselves in a campaign. They paddled out. People got involved in activism that had never really done it before. And it kind of just unlocked that whole kind of coastal activist group and kind of made a lot of people think, you know, wow, you know, if people care that much about the bite down here, you know, what would they do to look after their, you know, the beach around the headland or the beach out the front?
Mm. Yeah, it was an amazing thing to see all surfers come together on that particular day and just take to the water to support it, and obviously successfully as well. It's not just one of those things that sort of fades into the background, but you know, it didn't go ahead. So
it freaked me out, mate. We were working on it for a number of years, and we just couldn't believe it was happening in front of our eyes. You know, we're watching paddle outs, and there's 5,000 people at the beach, and there's 5,000 people at another beach, and you know, 3,000 here and 5,000 here. Mm. And yeah, it really just felt like a movement that had found its time.
Now, it's obvious to note why, you know, surfing would be on the forefront of environmental progress. But what about when it comes to things like gender equality and LGBT rights and things like that? We've seen a bit of that in surfing as well.
Oh, absolutely. And that's while there's been a really natural line into that environmental debate and surfers playing a role in that, socially, you know, like we said, we thought we were the throw-aheads on a lot of things. In terms of probably in equality and gender and being out in the water, I think we're behind, you know, and we have been for a long time. And I think kind of what you're seeing now and the shift probably, you know, I think it's probably the last 5 years you've really noticed it, and it just seems to be accelerating. It's just recorrecting back in terms of number of women in the water, the way they're treated in the water, which in the past hasn't been great. It's been a very, you know, the lineup's been a very chauvinistic place for decades now. The blokes have dominated it and felt, you know, that they've had dominion over it and made life really tough as a rule for a lot of women trying to get out there. But that's, you know, there's a real shift on right now, and it's palpable, and you've only got to paddle out, you know, take your pick at any beach around the country, and you'll see it in action.
Okay, just shifting a little bit. Surfing's growing in popularity hugely. You know, it's see what happens with the Olympics, but it's supposed to be in the Tokyo Olympics. We've got sort of wave pools and all those sorts of things happening, and it's becoming more and more corporatized. Do we sort of run the risk of corporatization becoming something that overpowers this voice, and or has the foundation already been set for the athletes and the industry and the media to keep this honest and keep this progress going forward?
Yeah. Well, surfing's wrestling with this right now, and that has wrestled with it for quite a while, actually. You know, we've always thought of ourselves as a fringe kind of movement, and we like to think of ourselves as sitting apart from mainstream society, and that's been, and that's part of the allure of surfing as well, is that you feel like you're something that's on the, yeah, it's on the wild edge a little bit. But the kind of reality today, it's really mainstream. It's like, it's connected to business, it's connected to, you know, wider society, and it's just, you look at the demographic shift of who actually surfs, and it's, you know, if you wound the clock back 25 years, it was generally guys in their late teens into their 20s, but now it's just a wild demographic spike. It's gone everywhere. It's like this big bang of demographics, and you've got, like, you know, women in their 60s and kids who are 5 and 6 and and it's just, it's gone everywhere, but it's also kind of pulled that from mainstream society. It's like, it's a lot of people who would never 30 years ago have considered surfing have now kind of got a foothold into it. And so it's the, you've got, in terms of socioeconomic demographic, it's changed wildly as well. You know, there's a lot of people who work, you know, straight jobs who consider themselves hardcore surfers. And that would never have been the case 30 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, with this corporatization, I mean, do we risk losing this progress, do you think? Do we risk it being overrun by finance, essentially?
Yeah, totally. Yep. And surfing wrestles with that all the time. It has within surfing, you know, with the surf industry. That's, you know, we really wrestled with that and how much that, you know, the fact that you had these big companies making a lot of money out of surfing, what that was actually doing to surfing. And, you know, surfing as a whole wrestled with that. Even the companies within wrestle with that. And it is really front of mind. And people really do think, are conscious about it, because they don't, no one who surfs wants it to lose that aspect. The fact that it does feel, still feels a little counterculture. It still, like I said, it still does feel a bit on the edge. And even the straightest person who comes to surfing, half the reason they come to surfing is to tap into that a little bit. And so it's just a battle that's going to, we're going to keep fighting, and but it will, you know, we'll never be football.
Yeah,
exactly. Put it that way, or tennis.
Yeah.
We'll always be something a little different.
Yeah. Okay, you are the publisher and editor of Surfing World magazine, and at the end of last year, you sort of made an announcement of some changes in direction for the magazine. Do you want to just tell us about those changes and why they've been made?
Well, we bought it. Obviously, magazine publishing, not exactly a boom industry these days, but essentially kind of what's happened, it's, we've kind of taken it back and running it as a cottage industry, which is how the magazines were originally run in the 60s, 70s and 80s when they first took off. But I also thought that you kind of can't make a magazine that just does surfing. I think surfing needs to connect to the wider world that it's in, and particularly something that's a bit marginal like a print publication. So we just looked around at what was happening around the country, and particularly stuff we're involved in as well. Yeah, you know, I'm kind of neck deep with the environmental movement as well. And I just saw so many people that were connected to it, and it's deep connection as well. And so we thought, well, what if you did a mag that spoke a little bit, that spoke to like core surfing, that thing we were just trying to allude to then, that kind of magical, indefinable quality that brings people to surfing. So you had that in there, but then you also talked about bigger environmental issues, bigger social issues, and just had some bigger discussions. Stuff that really doesn't have a place in short form online media. And so we kind of did a bit of a reposition, and we're off and running. And yeah, as I think we've kind of adopted the motto for Surfing World, onward and sideways. And that's where we're going right now.
Now, surfers are a pretty diverse bunch. You know, we talked about this demographic diversity now, you know, white collar, blue collar, progressive, conservative. Have you received any backlash with the change of direction or with this move to being a voice in environment and society?
Surprisingly not, certainly not for the magazine. It's a bit of a cultish following anyway, so we've got our crew, and there was certainly pushback around when we were active online around the like the bike campaign, and you know, some other fossil fuel campaigns and development campaigns, and certainly pushback there around that, just because of the nature of it. You know, you get that line, the best one that you get, you go, well, you're protesting against this oil development, but how did you get to the beach? What's your board made of?
Yeah.
And it's true. It's like, you know, I drive a car that runs on unleaded fuel, and my board's made with petrochemicals. And it kind of, you know, it is the argument though that, you know, what we're trying to do is you're trying to turn the ship in small degrees. And we kind of figured that what you're actually doing with this, you're in control of your own behavior. And as a consumer, you can make decisions that might influence up the chain, how things are done. But we kind of looked at it and go, well, you know, as a collective effort, if you took down that oil development, you know, how much contribution does that make to improving the climate or stopping it going backwards anyway? And so it was, you know, it's kind of fairly contested territory, although you do feel, again, you feel on that one, that people have really, there's a real shift and people understand that change has to get made. But we're pretty ambitious, you know. We wanted to go and go big game hunting and take down an oil field, and we still feel that's really important work to do. We've got to stop going backwards before we can go forwards.
Yep. Finally, do you think then, as you said, there's a bit of backlash when it comes to being a part of these big movements? And we've talked before about surfing being in this position where, like, people look to athletes and people look to surf media for direction when it comes to forming their opinions about certain things. Is surfing in a unique position to sort of bridge a gap in society when it comes to progress, to be able to potentially connect with people who might be resistant to change?
Oh, I think so, for sure. I think it's in a very unique position. And some of the people within it, you know, who've got platforms, I think are really getting a sense of that too, that they could be, you know, quite significant agents of social environmental change if they really wanted to. And I think you've seen that shift in the past few years. You know, surfers are speaking out on everything, and they've got big platforms and big voices. Like, look at Tyler Wright, you know, what she's done in the last 12 months. You know, she's come out and just pushed for equality and really found a voice. And she had a huge following anyway. But now, you know, she's sitting there as a two-time world champ, and people listen to her. Mm. And it's great, you know. It's actually affecting change, and it's making things better.
Sean, it's a great place that surfing's in now, and hopefully we can see a lot more change for the better in the future, and all the best with Surfing World. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks, Stefan.